Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call Human Services Finance and Policy to order. We have a very, very busy day, so I'm going to set some very strict ground rules. These bills have been vetted in our divisions, and so we're going to give them a quick hearing. I'm going to limit questions to one. I need to limit the time on each bill to 15 minutes so we can get done. As you all are aware, we're in deadline week. I also want you to hold Friday morning for a hearing. We have not yet scheduled bills, but I'm going to keep it open, so keep it on your calendar in case we get bills late from other divisions or committees. Okay, with that, members, Ms. Hansen, please take the roll. Chair is present.
Good morning, everyone. Chair Schultz present. Vice Chair Bonner.
Bonner present.
Lead Albright.
Good morning.
Good morning. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Hi, sir. Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Thank you. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Hansen present.
Thank you. Present. Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Okay. Thank you, members. It's a full house, Chair Schultz.
Thank you. It's wonderful to see everybody. Okay, with that, we need to approve the minutes from March 25th. Representative Albright, would you like to make the motion?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, any discussion or corrections to the minutes? Okay, Representative Albright moves the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay, the first bill, we've had to change the order slightly to accommodate a member, but the first bill today is House File 3950. Welcome back to the committee hearing. Is Representative Chair Moran on?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Welcome back. I'm going to move to adopt the division report from the Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 3950. Members, this is a voice vote. Please unmute. All those in favor of adopting the division report, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. And I'm going to move to lay over House File 3950 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. To your bill, Chair Moran.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and members. First, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to present today on House File 3950. This bill is a request from the Heading Home Ramsey Continuum of Care, which is a federally mandated organization designed to address the unsheltered issues here in St. Paul and Ramsey County. This bill supports the groundbreaking work in Ramsey County, the City of St. Paul, and its community partners are doing together to create a society where homelessness is rare, brief, non-recurring, and where racial disparities are eliminated and everyone is housed compared to the current system that keeps the rotating entity of homelessness. This bill demonstrates that when we fund shelter, capital, and emergency services, both broadly and specifically, we can prevent and end homelessness by delivering effective people-centered integrated responses that are racially equitable and driven by community voice, advocacy, and learning. I have two testifiers with me today to tell you more about Heading Home Ramsey and their work over the last 2 years when COVID hit. They come to the state for partnerships because CARES dollars and local property tax levies have run short. You will hear more about that from them. Quickly, my bill would fund a continuum of care for 4 acts for the next 5 years, starting this fiscal year. And they are really in crisis and need the money by before May 1st, but we are in a legislative process. So they are asking to fund 100-bed shelters with integrated support services for adults. This will be like single occupancy, 100-bed shelters with integrated support services for families, a continued operation of the day service shelter, and a pilot project serving frequent users of emergency services with intense 24/7 staffing. So this is a four-pronged approach that will cost $14.5 million annually for 5 years. And you have handouts in your package. And as I conclude, it's important to observe in many ways, shelters has become the respiratory for all of the state failed systems, including housing, healthcare, Ms. Cedric. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Moran. The first testifier I have is Ramsey County Board Chair Trista Matus-Castillo. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name correctly and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to kick it to Deputy Mayor Tinter first. She's going to start us off.
Thank you with that. So let's see. We have Jamie Tinter. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Jamie Tinter. I serve as the Deputy Mayor in the City of St. Paul. I am also the Chair of our Heading Home Ramsey Continuum of Care. And this ask of four services comes from our entire community that serves on that Heading Home Ramsey Continuum of Care. For the past couple of years, we've been really targeting innovative approaches to dealing with the housing crisis that was exacerbated by the COVID pandemic. During the height of it, we had nearly 400 people who were trying to survive on the streets outside in the city of St. Paul. We've invested a lot of resources in optimal response and figuring out how we can do a better job helping people navigate through crisis and housing challenges. And what we did in St. Paul in partnership with Ramsey County was invested our COVID relief dollars in shelter supports and wraparound services. And we've seen a great deal of success in that. And so what we have now is COVID relief dollars that we are in partnership with Ramsey County, so investing in permanent, long-term, deeply affordable 30% AMI housing. And so this ask would really allow us to not take a step backwards for all of the individuals that we were able to get indoors and actually help them move into long-term permanent housing. And so with that, I couldn't be more strongly in support as the City of St. Paul for this ask in partnership with Ramsey County.
Thank you, Ms. Tinter. Let's see. So I guess we're going now to the commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Trista Matus-Castillo, I'm chair of the Ramsey County Board and also co-chair the Continuum of Care for Ramsey County. I just want to start by thanking the Preventing Homelessness Committee for including $8 million for fiscal year 22. This is going to help us maintain the shelters that we've stood up, as Deputy Mayor Tinter referenced, during the pandemic. Ramsey County and St. Paul together have spent $35 million of our CARES money to stand up shelters and expanding shelters to make sure they're safe. In that expansion and stand up, we discovered that the model we created was highly successful and more likely to get folks stabilized long term, get their healthcare needs met, get their sobriety needs met, as well as get them into jobs. And I just wanted to share a quick story of one individual that was residing in our Bethesda shelter. His name is George. He had been employed as a welder, but following an injury, he lost his job and ultimately his home. He ended up at our Bethesda shelter. We chose to pursue a different model at Bethesda that prioritized stability for our clients and intensive wraparound services. That stability gave George the ability to focus his energy on his health and complete the physical therapy that had been keeping him from working. Knowing his room at Bethesda was secure allowed him to save a minimal income he was getting to purchase the equipment he needed to get a new welding job. And ultimately, we helped him move into his own apartment on a bus line close to his new job, and now he's employed. And it's these kinds of stories that we hear over and over and over that this model is critical. As you heard, our funding is running out. We've spent all of our CARES money to establish this program. We also partnered with the City of St. Paul to go upstream to solve the need for deeply affordable housing, in which we've invested $76 million of our ARP funds to do that. And so what we're facing is a bridge or a gap in time for the next 3 to 5 years to maintain the shelter system as we build new affordable, deeply affordable housing to move people from shelter into permanent solutions. And so really appreciate your support on this bill. It is incredibly important that we keep it going for the next 3 to 5 years, and we hope that you would consider adding that to base funding for the next 3 to 5 years as we work ourselves from shelter to permanent housing. And with that, I want to also invite one other guest, Madam Chair, quickly in my time. Commissioner Wayne Johnson from Washington County has joined us to talk about the regional approach.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Wayne Johnson. I'm the chair for the Washington County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here in support of Ramsey County's bill. One of the goals of Washington County is to promote the health, safety, and quality of life of its citizens. Access to safe and supportive housing is a cornerstone of well-being. Emergency shelters are a critical component of a comprehensive response to homelessness and serve as a stopgap to ensure that any person experiencing homelessness can feel safe, secure, and respected while on the path to acquiring stable housing. At any given time in Washington County, there is an average of 160 people experiencing homelessness. While Washington County is constantly working to increase our capacity to serve persons experiencing homelessness and increase affordable housing options, the need consistently outweighs our resources. Washington County stood up our own operated emergency shelters in early 2020, yet we still remain dependent on our regional and community partners to help us meet the ever-changing needs of our residents. In 2021, 49 Washington County residents needed to be housed in other metro shelters, with 32 of them housed in Ramsey. This follows along the same pattern as previous years. Those experiencing homelessness are highly mobile, frequently moving between cities and counties in search of resources that will best meet their needs. Due to our geographic proximity and the mobility of persons experiencing homelessness between our jurisdictions, we rely on Ramsey County as an integral partner in addressing the need for emergency shelter capacity. Housing solutions cannot end at the boundaries of counties or cities. It takes a coordinated effort between jurisdictions and community agencies to build the sustainable shelter and housing system. While this legislation may name Ramsey County as a beneficiary, it is clear that these desperately needed resources will support persons experiencing homelessness across the entire region, including Washington County. We strongly support this request for funding to maintain Ramsey emergency shelter capacity, commend Ramsey County for a proposal that will have benefits beyond their own county boundaries, and thank them for their ongoing partnership in the fight to end homelessness. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. I see we have a question. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers and, of course, Representative Moran. You know, my county's next, right? So I'm not picking on Ramsey County. So I just want to understand, the commissioner from Ramsey County had stated that she's hoping that this will go for 3 to 5 years. And I'm just wondering, well, is it your intention that the county will then pick up the tab for this? I don't fundamentally understand whether it's for Hennepin or Ramsey County, why we're first coming to the state rather than county taxpayers to take care of our own citizens. Thank you.
Let's see, Ms. Tincher or Commissioner. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. So we actually are already going to the taxpayers to stand up these shelters. We've used CARES funding and ARP funding. We are not coming to you first, we're coming to you last, actually, as we are filling this gap. And the reason we're only asking for 3 to 5 years is because this is the expanded shelter system that we had to stand up due to COVID and the increase and decrease in housing availability. So this is truly for, we will continue to run different shelters and shelters in Ramsey County, but we will actually take these expanded shelters offline as we increase the housing availability and permanent solutions. So this is a bridge to gap funding that will eventually go away. And it is already supplemented with a housing levy and tax increase that our taxpayers are also paying.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let's see, Representative Albright.
Thank you. And just to pick up where Representative Robbins left off for the Commissioner, Matas Castilla, you mentioned these shelters will be taken offline as you stand up for permanent housing. And could you elaborate on how you're able, how you are intending to do that from the resources that are available to you?
Commissioner Mata Castilla, please.
Yes, respond. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. So we are actually, we're funding the creation and build of new deeply affordable housing as well as wraparound services. And so as we create and bring those projects online, we have already gone out for RFP and have had numerous partners come to the table to apply for funds to start that process. So we'll bring those online and then transition individuals from shelter into housing. Folks who are in shelter now are already being transitioned, so it's not a complete wait, but we know that we don't have enough housing stock available, which is why we're bringing those online, and we suspect it will take 3 to 5 years.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Sandel, did you have a question?
Thank you. My questions have been answered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions. Chair Moran, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And let me just apologize for not being on camera. I'm in a location that doesn't allow both to happen at the same time. So, members, you heard from our community partners, Ramsey County, St. Paul, about an initiative that will move our state forward. And realizing that Ramsey County really is a county without a huge tax base in the beginning, but folks are coming from all across the state to find services and often are landing in Ramsey County. So it's important to observe in many ways that shelters have become the repository for all of the state's health system. If we look at housing and healthcare, education, workforce development, this is where we are. If we want to change shelters and homelessness outcomes, we need to rebuild a system that funds services as well as beds. Heading Home Ramsey has been working on that, and it has taken us into the place that we need to go into the future. So I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your consideration of including this in your omnibus bill, and I want to thank the members for their time and questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Moran. So House File 3950 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I want to thank all of our testifiers today. Thanks so much. Our next bill is House File 4277. No, is that right? House File 4427, is that right, Ying Yam? Yes, House File 4427. And this is, I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong bill.
Next would be House File.
We're on 4277, right?
Yep.
Sorry, I saw Sandra Feist on the screen. Sorry, Representative Feist. We're going to go to Representative Cagle's bill, House File 4277. So welcome back to the committee, Representative Cagle. I'm going to make a motion to lay over House File 4277 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. I'm not seeing any amendments. Why don't you explain your bill, Representative Cagle?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is House File 4277 funds the Heading Home Core Program. It provides base funding of $1.1 million a year. And I actually am an AmeriCorps alumni and also served on as the legislative appointee to the Serve Minnesota Board. And so I'm a big fan of these programs. And so AmeriCorps is a national movement for positive social change. And the new program, Heading Home Corps, helps support people experiencing housing instability. Nonprofits and government agencies need additional capacity to address increasing rates of homelessness. So Heading Home Corps assists by providing housing resource navigators to help expand capacity and help people secure stable housing. And so the housing resource navigators serve as full-time helping people access resources, develop action plans, and build necessary skills in order to gain and maintain stable housing, a prerequisite for making other improvements in a life, such as searching for a job, addressing mental health, and physical health. So with that brief explanation, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I have Alana Steins. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Representative Cagle, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for having me today. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen so I can share with all of you a little bit more about Heading Home Corp. All right. And so I just want to be, I'm so excited to be able to share about this AmeriCorps program with all of you today. My name is Alana Steins, and I'm the Director of Program Development at AMPACT. AMPACT is the nonprofit that delivers several of our state's largest AmeriCorps programs, including the Minnesota Reading Corps and Minnesota Math Corps programs. And our programs are part of Serve Minnesota, which is the State Commission on National and Community Service. And so just a friendly reminder for this group, Serve Minnesota is seeking $1.1 million per year for 3 years for the Heading Home Corps program, which is an AmeriCorps program, to leverage $2.2 million in federal funds and another $600,000 in educational awards each year. Inclusion in this would be able to allow 100 people to serve as AmeriCorps members statewide, helping thousands of individuals to get the support that they need to stabilize their housing and economic situation, and allow the program to serve more communities throughout Minnesota. Heading Home Corps will also serve as a workforce hub for a field facing shortages and provide opportunities for individuals with lived experience. And so the Heading Home Corps AmeriCorps program really started this year, and we currently have 50 sites across Minnesota, including several in the metro area, but also several throughout greater Minnesota, including places like Rochester Public Schools, in nonprofit agencies in International Falls, Bemidji, Northfield, and so on and so forth. I do just want to mention, since our predecessors were able to share about the Heading Home Initiative in Ramsey County, we do share a similar name, and Ramsey County is one of our esteemed partners that host AmeriCorps Housing Resource Navigators through the Heading Home Corps. But the Heading Home Corps is an AmeriCorps program, and we're really aiming to expand capacity statewide to end homelessness and housing insecurity. So Housing Resource Navigators, as Representative Cagle mentioned, work with individuals on a one-to-one basis, and they serve folks who are experiencing homelessness by establishing trusting relationships with individuals, and they use motivational interviewing skills. So they're partnering with communities and making sure that it's really a partnership in goal setting and action planning. They meet immediate needs of participants, but also provide resources and connect to opportunities. A big part of this AmeriCorps program is to build capacity of host sites and of our communities to be able to meet the growing need that we've seen in Minnesota around homelessness and housing insecurity. And our AmeriCorps members are trained and have that time to add that capacity with that ultimate goal of helping folks who are experiencing homelessness obtain safe and stable housing. Our members this year, these are just a little snapshot by the numbers. We have 84% of our cohort are women, 33% are younger folks, so they're 18 to 24. And over half of our cohort this year identify as Black, Indigenous, or people of color, which is really exciting. We want to make sure that we're reflecting communities being served in communities with some of the highest rates of homelessness. Additionally, over a quarter of our service cohort this year are people themselves who have lived experience with homelessness and housing insecurity. I also just note that Heading Home Corps is a great opportunity for people with lived experience by being able to give back, being able to have that shared journey together, and then build their careers moving forward. We collect data. We're a data-driven program, and in our first year, we've seen some really promising data highlights from our housing resource navigators. And some of the biggest things I would just like to highlight on this slide is that our housing resource navigators are being really successful in meeting people on a recurring basis. We know that that's really important to actually accomplishing goals and setting those action plans with communities being served. And so we're seeing people, our housing resource navigators are seeing people two or more times or three or more times, and that's a really big deal, as I mentioned before. So already we've served 602 folks and have had, you know, almost 1,000 hours of documented service area there. Our Hitting Home Corps members really help people access the complex system and the resources they need to be able to navigate that system successfully. So like I said, they're doing direct housing support, obtaining rental assistance, subsidized housing, so on and so forth, but they're also really helping to support that indirect housing support around things that we know really help people maintain and keep that stable housing. So things like food access, financial assistance, employment supports, and then referrals to places like healthcare, substance use resources, and so on. We're really excited to share some impact stories here. I know that Robin is serving as a housing resource navigator with Brooklyn Center Public Schools, and she actually served in our emergency response program over the summer and decided to stay on for a full term of service here in Brooklyn Center. And it's really given her the opportunity to assist families and really look at supporting from a whole family perspective through the Heading Home Corps. And so it's just been a really full circle experience for Robin. And that's the kind of impact that Heading Home Corps can make statewide across several different unique service partners. So I just want to thank all of you again for the opportunity to speak today. And from there, I will stop.
Thank you, Ms. Stimes. Any questions for the bill author or the testifier? I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Cagle, any closing remarks?
Thank you so much. I think, you know, AmeriCorps and programs, I can't say enough good things about them. They really helped me find my path in life. And so, and while serving too. And so I really think that's kind of, maybe where my aspirations for political office, you know, that wanting to serve. And so it's just another way that we can really get folks out there to help our communities. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. With that, members, House File 4277 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Next, we have House File 4427. Those numbers are too similar. Welcome back, Representative Feist. I'm going to move to adopt the division report from the Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 4427. Members, this is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the division report is adopted. So my motion, I'm going to move to lay over House File 4427 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Feist, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before COVID-19 struck, the Twin Cities region was grappling with surging homelessness. The pandemic exacerbated the problem, but also brought new resources to address it. In partnership with state, local, nonprofits, and federal funding, Hennepin County has invested significantly to fund homelessness solutions in an effort to prevent homelessness and move Minnesotans out of homelessness. Hennepin County has focused their investments on deeply affordable housing for those with the lowest incomes and people experiencing homelessness, committing $91 million in American Rescue Plan funding toward homelessness programs and affordable housing development. However, the massive investment is primarily with one-time money. Hennepin County's increased investments and services face a financial cliff when the ARP funds end in 2024. Homelessness is a statewide problem and needs a statewide solution. State supplemental funding is needed to maintain the shelter service models that better serve people entering homelessness. House File 4427 will provide the ongoing, sustainable funding needed for improved shelter operations and homeless response to ensure that that we have no gaps into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. The first testifier I have is Angela Conley, Hennepin County Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Angela Conley and I am a Hennepin County Commissioner. On the board, I chair the Health and Human Services Committee. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to testify. Your work really is vital to Minnesotans, and real people depend on the good work that you do. Combined with our federal partners, we, counties, cities, the state, nonprofits, and federal government have made significant historic investments to prevent homelessness when we can and to support persons and families experiencing homelessness. The pandemic has revealed the depth of racial and economic disparities in housing affordability and in housing access. And federal relief funds created an unprecedented opportunity to ramp up investments and make significant progress to prevent and move Minnesotans out of homelessness. Some highlights in Hennepin County. Our vision for our services continuum is to ensure that homelessness is rare, it's brief, and it's non-recurring, and that all residents have equitable access to increased housing stability. And at Hennepin County, we do this by minimizing new entries to homelessness, increasing transitions from homelessness into permanent housing, and financing affordable housing along the housing continuum. Deeply affordable housing truly is the fundamental issue here. We administer $146 million every year just toward that vision. As mentioned, Hennepin County has committed $91 million in American Rescue Plan funding toward homeless services and affordable housing development to be used by nonprofit partners to enhance existing programs and expand new ones. $46 million of our ARP funds went towards equitable housing recovery, including investments in deeply affordable housing areas such as single-room occupancy facilities, down payment assistance, and increased rental construction. And we've made an investment of $45 million in shelters and support services programs to swiftly move people out of homelessness and into new opportunities. Some of those investments include early intervention and assistance for people as they enter the system, low barrier shelters and modern purpose-built shelters, 24/7 hours of operation for existing shelters, housing-focused case management to help people in shelters and unsheltered settings move successfully into permanent housing. However, there's a looming fiscal cliff here. Hennepin County's increased investments in support services carry through to the end of the federal stimulus period and face a financial cliff when the ARP funds end in 2024. Hennepin has a network of shelters in need of state investment in capital and in support services, which include continued services for our Avivo Village's low-barrier 100 dwelling units and coordinated support services and American Indian Community Development Corporation Homeward Bound 50-bed shelter, providing culturally specific services for the Native American community, and capital needs at Simpson Shelter and St. Stephen's. This is a statewide issue. Homelessness is a statewide issue, and we need statewide solutions. And with the state's continued partnership to provide those services, we truly can be successful. Hennepin consistently has seen that one-third of people who are using single adult shelters had a last permanent residence outside of Hennepin County, and that this is typically between 1,500 and 2,000 people each year. So to wrap up, House File 4427 will provide the ongoing sustainable funding needed for shelter operations and homeless response to ensure that we have no gaps as these programs progress into the future. So thanks again for the opportunity to testify with you all about what we at Hennepin are doing to ensure that homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring, and hopefully someday non-existent. And I do believe I'm going to pass this on, Madam Chair, to Mr. David Hewitt. Thanks again.
Thank you, Commissioner Conley. Next testifier is Hennepin County Director of Housing Stability, Mr. Hewitt. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is David Hewitt. I'm the Director of Housing Stability at Hennepin County. And I'm going to share a little bit more context on this item. Hopefully you can see my screen at this point. In the years leading up to the pandemic, unsheltered homelessness in Hennepin County grew by 377%. People experiencing unsheltered homelessness are at greatest risk from fire, infectious disease, violence, and exploitation. This was where our system was failing and where it most desperately needed change. We only need to look at communities up and down the West Coast to see how much worse this situation can become if that trajectory were allowed to continue. We know affordable housing is the fundamental issue. Hennepin County has invested $46 million, as you've heard, of county ARP towards housing. building on an earlier $26 million used to purchase hotel sites to convert to deeply affordable housing. We are working closely with the City of Minneapolis on approximately $38 million of investments from their allocation of ARP. And we invested deeply in the crisis response. We believe we were the second community in the entire country to move people aged 60 and above into non-congregate shelters in hotels. A total of 1,137 people benefited from these programs, and we believe this saved lives. Just about a year ago, we had 540 people remaining in these programs, and today that number is zero. We created a team of housing-focused case managers and painstakingly, person by person, moved 460 people into permanent homes with a 97% retention rate. At the same time, we invested in transforming the ongoing homeless response. And these investments center on five key strategies. Diversion, early intervention that helps people identify and access alternatives to shelter. New low-barrier shelters. In late 2020, the American Indian Community Development Corporation opened Homeward Bound, and in 2021, they sheltered 488 people, helped 68 move to permanent homes, and a further 90 to move to treatment, transitional housing, and similar programs. That same winter, Avivo Village opened. This model emerged directly from people who were residing in encampments, and Avivo Village has sheltered 263 people to date, all of whom came directly from sleeping outside. They have moved 68 people into their own homes and numerous others to treatment and other positive destinations. Both of these shelters face insurmountable financial gaps without additional support. New shelter construction. We have two established providers that need to redevelop existing shelters. These critical resources are at risk, but we can seize this moment to develop modern, purpose-built shelters with housing and services on site. 24/7 operations. We have worked with the Street Voices of Change advocacy group. This is people who have experienced and are experiencing homelessness to improve all our shelters. That includes making them 24/7 to the fullest extent possible. Requiring people to leave in the morning and come back 10 hours later prevents effective work on permanent housing. And finally, case management. And this is also a priority in the Street Voices of Change Shelter Bill of Rights. And our work in the hotels really acted as a proof of concept here. A dedicated case manager working alongside the individual, taking responsibility for getting them into housing as a matter of urgency, that was the formula for those 460 moves from hotel shelters to permanent housing. At the end of last year, we expanded that team and started rolling it out to serve people in other homeless settings. And with this new remit, the team has moved 110 further people from homelessness to housing, including directly from unsheltered settings. And this number increases pretty much daily. So what is the impact of all this work? What you see here is a dashboard designed for Hennepin County by HUD Technical Assistance. It tracks progress against one simple goal: how many people are moving from homelessness to permanent housing across the whole community. And this chart is for single adults and youth, who make up about 92% of the people experiencing unsheltered homelessness. The blue line is pre-pandemic. The orange line starts October 2020, when the transformative investments in our system were just starting. We have moved almost 50% more people to permanent housing compared to the same period before the pandemic. And every data point we look at suggests that this will continue to accelerate if we continue on our current path. But as you've heard, we have immediate needs for partnership on capital and operations. While we are using one-time stimulus funds to the greatest extent possible, it is unthinkable to me that once ended, we would go back to a system that relies on private donations for the majority of its operating budget and property tax for the rest. We know what that looks like: overnight only, overcrowded, unsustainable, and inadequate to meet the needs of our most vulnerable residents. We are now on a different path, but we need to continue on that path. And to finish, I just wanted to share this mural, which was painted on the wall of the last hotel shelter we operated. Every time a guest moved to permanent housing, they added a flower to this mural. So each flower you see here represents a new beginning for someone. And this illustrates what we are all working towards across Hennepin County and all of our partners. We appreciate your support for our efforts to date and into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Are there any questions? I can't see hands. Could someone stop sharing screen? Thank you. Are there any questions? Not seeing any. Representative Feist, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just encourage the committee to support this funding. Hennepin County has done really remarkable data-backed work to address homelessness. And I don't know if it was mentioned in the testimony, but one third of the people served by these efforts had a last address in Greater Minnesota. So these are services that impact residents across Minnesota. And I would just encourage people to support this great programming. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist, and thank you to our testifiers today. Thanks for joining the committee. Okay, the next, so I'm going to lay over House File 4427 to be included for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance and Policy Bill. The next bill we have, and members, we're doing really good on time, so thank you. The next bill we have is House File 3568, and this is Representative Hurst. Bill, welcome to the committee. I'm going to move to adopt the division report from Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 3568. Members, this will be a voice vote. Please unmute. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. And Representative Hurst, I see that you have a DE-2-1 amendment. Would you like us to adopt that and then speak to the bill as amended?
Please do, Madam Chair.
Okay, members. I'm going to move the DE-2-1 amendment to House File 3568. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the DE-2-1 amendment is adopted. And I'm going to move that House File 3568 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Hurd, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday when we were on the House floor, the Representative Detmer reminded us that today is Vietnam Veterans Day, and I could not think of a better day than today to present House File 3568. This is a bipartisan bill focused on supporting more moves out of homelessness and promoting more stable housing. It builds on efforts from last session to strengthen our state's housing support program. Housing support is a statewide permanent supportive housing program that pairs housing assistance with support services. It serves seniors and adults with disabilities with low incomes. More than half of recipients are people of color or American Indian. Housing support is an evidence-based program and perhaps the state's best tool to help people exit homelessness, but best doesn't mean it's perfect. This bill proposes a seemingly small but significant reform, allowing housing support participants to retain more of their SSI income and veterans benefit. This would achieve two things. One, remove barriers that lead individuals to choose to stay in shelter rather than enrolling in housing support, and two, help individuals build the skills and savings needed for greater housing and financial stability. This bill is grounded in the work and experience of emergency shelter and housing support providers, county partners, veterans organizations, disability advocates, and most importantly, individuals with lived experiences of homelessness. You will find letters of support from many of them in your packet. We ask for your support and welcome comments and questions to help guide this critical reform. I do have a testifier here today, Madam Chair. It's Lorna Schmidt, Public Policy Manager of Catholic Charities of St. Paul. And with your permission, I will yield my time to Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Ms. Schmidt, please state your name and affiliation and then proceed. And welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lorna Schmidt, and I'm the Public Policy Manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Catholic Charities is a regional leader of housing, emergency shelter, and direct services, serving over 23,000 men, women, children, and families each year. I appreciate this opportunity to discuss housing support and what we see as a really critical reform to improving housing and homelessness outcomes, and especially want to thank Representative Herr for her leadership and support in working with us to bring this forward. More than rental assistance, housing support is a permanent supportive housing program that pairs housing assistance, including food, bed and linens, and laundry, with support services. It serves low-income seniors, veterans, and adults with disabilities who are at risk of homelessness in all corners of the state. It is perhaps our best tool to help people exit homelessness, supporting nearly 4,000 moves in 2019 alone. Like an old piano, however, it's in need of some fine-tuning. As it stands now, housing support formulas treat earned and unearned income differently when calculating how much an individual must pay toward their housing each month. Unlike earned income from wages, an individual with unearned income, like SSI, RSDI, and veterans benefits, can be forced to pay all of their monthly benefit except for $111 as a personal allowance. This is true even though in many cases, individuals have worked for those benefits. For them, it means the door to home through housing support could cost them as much as 90% of their monthly income. The sizable burden of this financial obligation means that right now, there are individuals in shelter and on the street who are turning down housing support. They are declining housing assistance they're eligible for and which could provide them an exit from homelessness because accepting it would mean losing nearly all control of their already very limited finances. There are also housing support renters who struggle each month to pay their client obligation because the $111 allowance isn't enough to pay for their other basic needs, things like a phone, transportation, personal hygiene supplies, support for their children or family members, clothes, not to mention any emergency expenses that might pop up. Housing support renters are leaseholders with the same rights and responsibilities of anyone else in a market rate apartment. When a client obligation isn't paid, it puts that person at risk of eviction, which can throw them back into homelessness and make their next try at housing that much more difficult. And then there are the individuals who want to transition off housing support, but feel they are trapped, held in poverty and forced to become reliant on it. They entered the program as a first step on their path toward housing stability, but with no real opportunity to build the skills and savings to transition into something else, it ended up feeling more like another dead end for them. This bill is about providing more Minnesotans a path out of homelessness and removing the roadblocks to greater housing and financial independence. It aims to reform the way housing support considers SSI and veterans benefits to ensure people aren't forced to pay more than 30% of their monthly income, which is the general standard for what is considered affordable housing. This idea came to us from our staff and those we support, and the bill itself is the product of feedback from numerous partners, including fellow shelter and housing support providers, veterans and disability nonprofits, counties, and others. We've appreciated their support as we work to improve our state's housing and homelessness outcomes, and today we ask for yours too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. Any questions from members? I'm not seeing any. Closing remarks, Representative Kerr?
Just ask for the committee's support, Madam Chair, and I look forward to being able to, you know, with the passing of this, to support our veterans and those in SSI. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Herr. And with that, members, House File 3568, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you, testifiers, too, today. The next bill we have in our docket is House File 3377. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Keeler. I'm going to move to adopt the division report from the Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 3377. Members, this will be a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. So I'm going to move to layover House File 3377 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Representative Keeler, please describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's good to be back. Again, talking about some of the things and conversations that have come up around the efforts of preventing homelessness. One story I tell is when my niece was 20 years old, she had pretty major surgery, had to move away from her community. But as her auntie, I was able to help host her for a while because of medical purposes. She stayed with me for roughly 3 months as she healed, which we fear that it, had I not been able to support, we're not sure what housing would have looked like for her. And so what this bill does is it creates a pilot program for chosen family hosting. It would be an establishment of this program because what we know is 1 in 10 young adults ages 18 to 25 experience homelessness, and half of them don't feel comfortable in shelters. They feel more comfortable staying with individuals that they know, understand, extended family, feel really warm and welcoming. But what we also know is it puts a burden sometimes on that host family. So what this pilot program does is it sets up an agreement between the individual who is staying at a house and the chosen family to make sure that X amount of funds maybe are going to offset the cost of extra food, to offset the cost of extra electric that may, or water that costs that may occur. But it's an agreement
between the individual who is staying and the family who is being the host. We believe that this is part of looking upstream and preventing homelessness, that if we can build those relationships in our communities, it helps lower the need of individuals who are maybe ending up in our shelter or unsheltered in our communities. So with that, Madam Chair, I will yield the rest of my time to our testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. And I have as the testifier, Jacqueline White from the founder and executive director of CloseKnit. Welcome to the committee, Jacqueline White. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Jacqueline White, executive director and founder of CloseKnit. We are loving youth out of homelessness. Thank you, Chair Schultz, Representative Keeler, all the committee members, and a special shout out to Representative Fisher, who is also an author on this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to share about this work. I wanted to follow up on a conversation that we had in the Preventing Homelessness Committee, where Representative New Brinley asked about, recognized that people are already doing this, like Representative Keeler shared, this kind of chosen family hosting. So why do we need to invest in this more? Representative New Brinley and Representative Gomez actually both there was a nice bipartisan moment there where they both shared that their families did do chosen family hosting. So how I would like to address that question is sharing some of the research that CloseKnit has done. We have, which is included in your packet, peer-reviewed research in which we interviewed different hosts of different economic and races to understand what is the experience of people who are hosting. We put up signs at food shelves and at a GED program, and through that we found a woman named Gerilyn, who I actually had the privilege of interviewing. Actually, I'm going to put Gerilyn in quotes. It's not her real name. And she was doing what good aunties like Representative Keeler do. She had found out that her nephew was living in an area with that was not safe, with high gang violence. And she said, I don't want you there. I want you to come and stay with me. The issue, though, was that she lived in an apartment building and there is a guest policy. So she could only he could only stay for 2 weeks at a time. So she said, well, it's a really good thing that he works the late shift at McDonald's, because then he can sneak in after hours and people don't know that he's staying there. He was unsurprisingly depressed. He didn't have an address. He didn't have a way to move forward in his future. Talking with Gerilyn and actually sitting on the couch where her nephew slept every night, really, her story really haunted me. I mean, here is somebody who cares so much about a young person that they are willing to risk their own housing in order to support them. What can we do for people like this? So I'm pleased to be able to say that this chosen family hosting program that we've helped develop has been successful. So Hope for Youth in Anoka, we designed the program and Hope for Youth got philanthropic dollars to put this into practice. And we really helped address the issues that prevent stabilizing these arrangements. And as it happened, a young man, Joe, showed up at the drop-in center one day in a totally parallel situation. He was staying with his granny. It was under the radar. Granny got to a point where she said, my blood pressure, this is too stressful. You're going to have to find another place to stay. This is just not working, right? And so he came to the drop-in, and I think we've been hearing, there really isn't a lot of affordable housing. There really wasn't much. There isn't really much to offer, right? So Brenda, who is the case coach at Hope for Youth for the Chosen Family Program, was able to, because of this investment, was able to offer the landlord the two things that landlords really want. They want their money, so the landlord knew that there was going to be additional resources in this arrangement, and that landlords, they don't want problems, right? They want things to go smoothly. And Brenda was able to say, well, here's my business card. If there's any issues, you call me. And the landlord, who was initially very resistant, was won over. And so Joe was able to continue to stay with Granny. So I just want to say there are people out there who are doing this beautiful work of loving up the young people in their lives, but they often do not have the financial resources to really do that. And we've tried this. It works. It's powerful. And it's also something that works, in rural communities where we know that supporting these informal networks is just a big value in greater Minnesota. So I so appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Any questions for the bill author or the testifier? Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to say thank you to the testifier for your information. And thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill forward. I want to say that I've been involved. I worked at a nonprofit where we had a host home program for 12 years. And this bill does a great job of getting to the issue of what needs to be done to help support people who want to come together in these arrangements. So often when we were seeing this example play out over the 12 years is there were the extended kin family that were available for some of these youth, but because of how tight the income was for many of these people, they could not afford to take them in on a long-term basis. And we could see that there was a real difference. There was much more willingness from families who had more income to be able to do this. And so often the youth that we were dealing with came from support networks that did not have that income, those income resources anywhere in their support network. And this is something that would have helped kept the kin relationship family much more together and would have resulted in much more successful outcomes. And the important thing is to be able to do the pilot program like this is you've got a great reporting program in there, and it offers stability that host home programs are going to need going forward, because when you're trying to rely exclusively on foundations and private giving, that goes up and down, and you can't afford to have interruptions when you're trying to provide these kind of services. And I think it's really important that we have the state being part of the program to help provide a more consistent funding stream to make sure that people don't lose their housing down the road because their funding was not there. So thank you for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Any closing remarks, Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this bill. And again, just trying to be really creative and mindful of how we do this work in preventing homelessness and reaching out to the communities that we already have doing some of this great work just to offset some of that cost. Thank you for the consideration.
You're muted, Madam Chair.
Wow, I haven't done that in a while. Members, so with that, members, thank you, Representative Keeler. We're going to lay over House File 3377 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Okay, members, the next bill we have on our agenda is House File 3613. Representative Olson, welcome back to the committee. I'm going to move to adopt the division report from Preventing Homelessness Division for House File 3613. Members, this is a voice vote. All those in favor of adopting the report, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. I'm going to move to layover House File 3613 for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. I'm not seeing any amendments. So Representative Olson, please describe your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for allowing me to present House File 3613, which builds upon a bill I authored a few years ago. So in 2019, the Shelter Linked Mental Health Grant Program was established due to the incredible needs we are hearing from service providers around the state who are supporting youth experiencing homelessness and youth in the safe harbor settings who had experienced sexual exploitation. It was designed based on our past decade of success with the school-linked mental health care grant. Like School Link, the Shelter Link grant integrates community-based mental health staff into shelter sites to build rapport, deliver group and individual mental health support, and equip staff to better meet mental health needs. Though the pandemic has substantially increased mental health needs, we have seen a tremendously positive impact of integrating mental health supports into caring for youth through the Shelter-Linked Mental Health Grant. Unfortunately, at this time, we're also seeing our homeless youth system increasingly being relied upon as the final safety net for youth with mental illness. Due to these concerning observations, DHS convened a stakeholder discussion to better understand this crisis in both our mental health and homeless youth service systems. Though the challenges are complex, the Shelter-Linked Mental Health Grant was identified as a foundational solution to build on. House File 3613 proposes to expand the Shelter-Linked Grant to include an additional homeless youth and safe harbor sites by investing $1.65 million in this effective service. With five of the 55 eligible service sites implementing Shelter-Linked Mental Health from the $500,000 initial funding, we believe this additional investment can substantially increase access to this critical service. And at this time, I will invite Molly McNerney to share her testimony.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Welcome to the committee. Ms. McNerney, you are the Senior Director at Hope Street Shelter. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Molly McNerney. I'm the Senior Program Manager with Catholic Charities, Hope Street. I'm here today on behalf of Aspire Minnesota and our homeless youth and mental health service providers. Hope Street Shelter supports unaccompanied homeless youth. We operate with a trauma-informed care model and the newly introduced integration of mental health counseling, made possible by a shelter-linked mental health grant, is a transformative and critical piece of this. My team has seen increasing cases of acute mental illness among the youth that we serve, including anxiety, depression, and psychosis. For some youth, it's mental illness that strains family relationships and causes them to leave home, but it's also not uncommon for youth discharged from residential treatment programs or hospitals to find themselves in a shelter with nowhere else to go. The experience of homelessness is in itself traumatic, and it intensifies mental health symptoms. I'd like to share one example of the impact of this work. We had a young woman come into our shelter after she left the home of a family member because she didn't feel safe. When she came to us, she appeared anxious and fearful and was displaying signs of psychosis. After warming up to some of the staff, the youth shared that she had been losing weight, despite already being quite thin and very hungry. She reported that she was fearful of food being poisoned and has been unable to eat. We noticed she was also becoming increasingly paranoid towards certain staff and youth, which was creating conflict in the shelter and jeopardizing her ability to safely remain in our program. My staff consulted with our shelter-linked mental health therapist to problem-solve ways to build trust with this young person so that she could eat and feel safe in our program. The therapist also worked to build trust and eventually met one-on-one with her on a regular basis. I'm happy to report that this young person is now in permanent housing. If it weren't for this grant and the support of our therapist, though, my team likely wouldn't have been able to continue to shelter her, and she would have had nowhere else to go. At Hope Street, the staff support the youth around the clock. Our therapist is on site once a week, building trust with our youth and taking the time to introduce herself to each of them. Being able to consult with a therapist who's familiar with our program and the young people we serve helps my team to provide great care. It's become an irreplaceable asset for our team to feel supported and more effective in caring for our youth, especially those that are experiencing the compounded trauma of homelessness and acute mental illness. The Shelter-Linked Mental Health Grant has provided an effective way to involve youth in mental health supports by removing barriers to accessing care and reducing stigma. It means we can support these youth mental health while simultaneously working to stabilize their housing. This shortens the length of shelter stays and prevents future homelessness. I see every day the impact of this funding, and I hope you'll continue to support it and this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McNerney. Let's see, any questions from members? Not seeing any questions. Representative Olson, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And I just I also point out that there is a really great report from DHS that was included in the member packet. I know this is like really hard talking about the intersection of homelessness and mental health, but it's an incredibly hopeful thing to read this report and see there are things that are working and an opportunity to invest. And this is definitely one of them. So I just encourage members to read that document. And again, just ask for your support and thank you for hearing this bill, Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And with that, members, House File 3613 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you, and thank you to our testifier today. Okay, members, we are really doing well on time. Let's see. The last bill in our agenda, I believe, is House File 2958. So, Representative Pinto, would you like to move to adopt the division report from Behavioral Health?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Pinto moves to adopt the division report from Behavioral Health for House File 2958. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, nothing. Let's see, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Looks like you have an amendment. Is it the A4 amendment, Representative Pinto?
I believe that's correct, Madam Chair. I would move that amendment.
Okay, we're going to move the A4. Do you want to quickly describe it?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually would. In previous questioning in committees, there was a bit of confusion about the scope of the bill, and the amendment makes clear that this is intended to encompass controlled substances and the abuse of them, as opposed to substances more broadly, such as alcohol and tobacco. And so I appreciate members putting this on so we can then have a discussion about the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Pinto moves the A4 amendment. This is a voice vote, members. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. Two-year bill as amended, Representative Pinto. Oh, I'm sorry. My motion is to lay over House File 2958 as amended for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Two-year bill as amended, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. So this bill, House File 2958, members, is an example of old-fashioned lawmaking. So I came up with this idea, worked with our staff. You'll note there's no testifiers. I've got no documents that you have to read to understand this, except for the bill language. And this comes out of my work as a prosecutor, addressing a wide variety of crimes, including those relating to controlled substances. And the thought that that this is a really important area for our state. We know that we have our narcotics throughout our state being abused, being sold, and we want to make sure that we're having just the best approach that we can. And it seems to me that I've seen a lot of success in other areas. I'm seeing Representative Mueller on my screen and thinking about our task force on criminal sexual conduct and a number of other issues where we get a group together and they examine an issue and come back to us with recommendations and thoughts on that important issue. And it seems to me that the abuse of controlled substances is an area that would benefit greatly from that. You'll see from the bill that this task force would encompass people from a variety of perspectives. From my perspective as a prosecutor and those in the criminal justice system, certainly those in public health as well, and saying, what can we do that is possibly better in how we address the abuse of controlled substances, and perhaps to get confirmation that we're doing the right thing in certain areas with respect to this issue. There's a solid examination, if you look down at line 3.11, starting there, subdivision 4, a series of steps examining the data at every step of the process to say, what can we be doing better with respect to this? And I guess I'll note, finally, as I had said, with respect to the amendment, that the focus here really is controlled substances, narcotics. Of course, abuse of alcohol and tobacco in particular is a big concern in our society. I should note that in my work as a prosecutor, I see the impact of alcohol abuse regularly, unfortunately. But we're really talking about drugs, including prescription drugs, for which we've decided that they're going to be controlled and be criminalized and then have addiction services, various things. And it seems like it makes a lot of sense for us to examine this from every angle possible. So with that, I think, Madam Chair, I'm ready for any questions and discussions members have.
Okay, we don't have testifiers. So any questions? So let's grill Representative Pinto. No questions for Representative Pinto? Wow, you guys are so quiet today. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Pinto, any closing remarks?
I'll note, Madam Chair, that this bill received, I think, a very favorable hearing in the Public Safety Committee early on, and support from members of both parties, and then in Behavioral Health, and of course now in Human Services, and I think really illustrating that we have got to take a multi-angle perspective on this issue. This is written to go through Commissioner of Public Safety, so I think this would end up being Chair Mariani's budget problem as opposed to yours, Madam Chair, which I think will please you, maybe members of this committee as well. But really appreciate the discussion and would appreciate members' support. And I'm so hopeful if this goes through that then in future years we'll get a report back that we can use to be just as effective in addressing this issue as possible. So thank you again, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Pinto, for all the work you're doing on this bill and other things you do in our caucus. So with that, members, House File 2958, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. And we have made it through a very packed agenda, so kudos to all of you. So we have another big day tomorrow and Thursday, and like I said, keep Friday on the calendar in case more great bills come to our committee. So with that, members, I'm going to give you some extra free time, and I will see everybody later. Everyone have a great day. Bye-bye.